Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 330. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about patriots and tall ships and dinosaurs as we go to Connecticut. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. As you're traveling out in the U.S. this summer on the East Coast, if you're doing some hiking, obviously there's some risk of Lyme disease and ticks that you need to be careful about. But there's a new problem, a tick that can turn you into a vegetarian. That's right, a tick that can give you such a severe allergic reaction to meat that you would want to swear off it. This particular episode of the Amateur Traveler is talking about Connecticut, the third smallest state in the U.S., but Connecticut has something that one other state does not have, and that's a national park. The only state in the Union without a national park, Delaware, wants one, and a proposal has been made for a national historic park to be situated in Delaware. All of the other states in the United States have one, also Puerto Rico, Guam, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and the Northern Mariana Islands and American Samoa all have national parks, just not Delaware. And then it's not really a news story if somebody tries to sneak out of a hotel room in the middle of the night to dodge the hotel bill, unless, of course, that person is trying to sneak out with 60 servants to dodge a $7.4 million hotel bill, as a Saudi prince was caught doing last week at the Shangri-La Hotel in Paris. I'm going to say that if you're trying to sneak out in the middle of the night, trying to do it with 60 people is probably a bad idea. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Jen Russell, who's coming to us from Connecticut and come to talk to us about the same state. Jen, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, and you've heard the show before, so you have some idea of how this is going to go. But why should someone go to Connecticut?
Well, Connecticut is an unusual state in that it's the third small state. It's very small. However, it has an awful lot of things that are very entertaining to people who might be considering vacation plans. It is located halfway between New York City and Boston, so it's actually quite accessible. Additionally, the topography really is what's attractive to a lot of people. It has two really attractive and interesting features. First, it has rolling hills, which are covered with forests. So a lot of people like to take advantage of that in the fall. They like to come out and take a look at the changing foliage, and it really is quite spectacular. Also, the coastline is outstanding as well. Mm-hmm. Much like, I know you're out in California, and I know that Californians are really proud of their beaches, but the New England beaches have a different quality. Connecticut in particular has some really romantic, almost I would call them moody beaches, in that they have these dramatic views that are just gorgeous. They have lighthouses. There are all sorts of, you know, rocks. It's a rugged terrain. But what's distinct about Connecticut in particular is the fact that the coastline is really sort of sheltered by Long Island Sound. Long Island, New York, actually juts out into the water just about the entire length of the Connecticut coastline, which is approximately 150 miles or so. So that means that the waves that are coming into the beaches are actually a little bit less, I would say, intimidating to people who might have young children or older people who are interested in taking a dip in the water, but not necessarily having to fight upstream against difficult waves.
So great for kids, not great for for surfing.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And you mentioned, and I'm going to interrupt you here for a second, the third smallest state, and I would have guessed second. So what's the second smallest state? Rhode Island's obviously the smallest.
Exactly. I think it's Delaware, actually, that is the second smallest.
Okay.
Yes. Connecticut itself is about 60 miles north to south and approximately 100 miles east to west, which means that it's only 5,000 square miles. To someone coming from a different country, say Europe, that sounds rather large, but really in a comparative sense to the rest of America, it really isn't. So that means that no point is really more than, say, 3 hours car ride away from any other point.
And we should say that there was a time when Connecticut was the largest state.
Indeed, it was among the first states.
It was the first state, therefore it was the largest state.
That's true. That's a good point.
The first state to sign the Constitution of the United States.
Exactly. And in fact, Connecticut is quite proud of its history. As you mentioned, it goes well past the beginning of this country. In fact, if you look way back, there is evidence of dinosaurs at Dinosaur State Park, which is located in Rocky Hill, Connecticut. In 1966, some construction workers were moving around some rocks and that sort of thing, and they found evidence of dinosaur tracks. So there is a park in that area. It's a nice family outing to come and take a look and see the history that goes that far back. But that said, Connecticut truly is known more for, I guess, its position in the Revolutionary War. Nathan Hale is considered to be the first American martyr. He was actually from Connecticut, and he was the person credited with saying, "I regret that I have but one life to give
my country." Right. Well, exactly. After he was caught as a spy.
Indeed. Ironically, too, though, there's another famous spy from Connecticut, Benedict Arnold, who actually switched sides to the English side and was responsible for doing a lot of damage in the Connecticut area, specifically New London, Connecticut. His troops, once he had joined the English side, had actually helped to burn down the city of New London. So Connecticut has seen both sides of the action. But as you mentioned, Connecticut is very proud of being the Constitution state. One great attraction that you might want to consider if you're coming to Connecticut is to actually see the state capitol building. They give free tours there. It's a lovely building.
And the state capitol would be in Hartford?
In Hartford, Connecticut. You've got it. And it's a lovely building. There has been some controversy because I think it was not always considered to be a lovely building. However, that said, it is gorgeous. And it gives free tours. So you're able to find out not just about the Constitution of Connecticut, but the important role that it played in the American Constitution, because a lot of what is in the American Constitution actually came from the Connecticut State Constitution.
We should say even the Eiffel Tower was originally thought by many to be ugly, so it's funny how that can change over time. And to give Mr. Benedict Arnold there some credit, before he was a traitor, he also saved the revolution at the Battle of Saratoga. So, a complex character. So
Indeed, exactly.
So, before we go a little further, is there a recommended itinerary? You have us at the State Capitol building. Is Hartford a good place for us to start? I mean, we could day trip to every place in the state from any particular point. It's not a big state. So how would you recommend we divide our time?
Well, I would definitely think that you should spend some time in Hartford itself. Mm-hmm. Hartford not only has the Capitol building, as I mentioned, but it also has the Mark Twain House. The Mark Twain House is a lovely example of a type of architecture in Victorian times, but it also speaks to the great history that occurred there. Mark Twain, of course, is known for having written a number of important American stories, and I believe he even wrote a good many of them at the house that is located in Hartford.
And I don't think of Mark Twain and Connecticut, although I do think of Mark Twain and a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. I don't know if he wrote that in Connecticut or not.
Isn't that interesting? Well, what I find interesting is the fact that Hartford used to be the richest city in the entire nation right after the Civil War. At that time, I guess the major publishers were actually located there, which explains why you're going to see writers like Mark Twain located there. And what I find interesting also is that approximately the same time, the abolitionist movement had been occurring. And a lot of that occurred in the Connecticut area. So Mark Twain was actually, if I'm not mistaken, neighbors with Harriet Beecher Stowe, who was a famous author at that time.
Right. Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Exactly. She wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin in the Hartford area herself. So the area is replete with a lot of historic houses. And one of my favorite things to do, having spent some time there a few months ago, is to observe and really appreciate the fantastic architecture, I guess, that grew up around Hartford. The area, as I mentioned, used to be the richest area in the country. So some fantastic Victorian houses are out that way. The city, of course, like a lot of American cities, has seen its up and downs. And I would have to say that right now, it's starting to turn around a bit. They have a science center out there. They're really trying to work on drawing more tourists into the area. But what I really enjoyed about it was actually walking around some of the streets outside of the skyline where the insurance buildings are located, which are also quite interesting to see.
And you say insurance buildings, we didn't say, but Hartford is, in case you are not someone from the U.S. and didn't know, the center, or at least has historically been the center of insurance in the U.S.
Yes. And what's interesting about that is that Hartford is actually inland. However, the insurance industry grew up around maritime exploration and maritime trade.
Oh, that makes sense. Sure. Mm-hmm.
So actually, a lot of those buildings, in fact, the insurance industry itself, started up around maritime causes, even though the area itself, Hartford itself, is not directly on the ocean. But Hartford has a lot of beautiful old buildings. I particularly liked the Ashley Street area, where you can walk around and see some very well-preserved historic houses that are at least 150 years old, maybe 130 years old, and they're just amazing to see. So that's a really nice diversion from seeing the other sorts of things in the Hartford area. In the Hartford area, they have a lot of the Connecticut Freedom Trail is located in that area.
And I'm not familiar with the Connecticut Freedom Trail.
Well, that pertains to the abolitionist movement, and Hartford Beecher Stowe's house is there, of course. Outside of Hartford, there are other examples of the Connecticut Freedom Trail, including Milo Freeland's grave, which is located in North Canaan. The soldier who was profiled in the movie Glory is actually Milo Freeland, and he was one of the first, if not the first, African-American volunteer for the Union Army.
Okay.
I think that pretty much covers Hartford. And then if you'd like to move on to other things, that's fine,
sure.
too.
And where would we go from there?
Well, I think it is worth mentioning New Haven shortly. The city of New Haven is home to Yale University. And Yale University has a beautiful campus. It's just a lovely walk around. But also, it has several museums that are worth investigating as well. They have a natural history museum, the Peabody Natural History Museum, which is a great day trip with kids. And also, Yale University itself has a great endowment for art. So there are a number of pieces which are really interesting to see. And what's appealing to me about it is the fact that, you know, you're not standing in line, say, in New York City, and going through the rigmarole of having to go through some of these larger museums. Mm-hmm. But instead, you get to tap into what are some very interesting pieces, but located in a smaller museum in a smaller setting. So there's something a little bit more intimate about it, and it's just a wonderful day trip.
Okay. Excellent.
Great.
And I should say my daughter attended Yale University.
Did
you? Yeah, well, she attended it in the summertime as a high school student, but, you know.
That's fun, though, you know, and it's just a nice area. I'm hoping she enjoyed it because it just sounds like a wonderful treat.
She did, yeah, very much so.
Excellent.
Excellent. Where to next?
Well, you can't really go to Connecticut without going to the coastline. Connecticut has, as I mentioned, about 150 miles of beach lines. And really, there are so many different beaches that you can go to. Hammonasset State Park, for example, or Rocky Neck State Park, all have some wonderful beaches. However, if you're really going to understand Connecticut and the history that Connecticut presents, the best place to go probably is Mystic, Connecticut.
Mystic Seaport, sure, absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah, Mystic Seaport is a wonderful example of how people can get together and try to preserve and educate people about the history of an area. Mystic Seaport has about 40 or 50 buildings which are devoted to not only preserving history, but also displaying different antiquities associated with the maritime history of Connecticut. So in it, you'll find a number of things, including the Charles Morgan, which is a wonderful ship, which actually was involved, if I'm not mistaken, in the Amistad story.
Oh, okay. And the Amistad story, for those of you who didn't see the movie, was a shipload of slaves who managed to take control of their ship and then ended up in U.S. courts with what was the ruling? Were they free people? Were they pirates? Were they slaves that needed to go back? So check out that movie.
Exactly. It's very entertaining, but also I think it speaks to the evolution of the American viewpoint about slavery. Mystic also has the Mystic Aquarium, which is a wonderful trip, which I think you could spend 1 or 2 days at, honestly, if you have the energy to do so.
Now, do you know how old the Mystic Aquarium is? I'm thinking it wasn't there the last time I was in Mystic Seaport, although that was 1977, so there's probably a lot of things that are new.
Right, indeed. And in fact, you know, honestly, I don't know the date. I do believe that it probably dates from the 80s, but I could be wrong on that. But it really has a number of wonderful attractions, not limited to the fact that they really are devoting a lot of time now to undersea exploration, particularly the Titanic. So there's a wonderful exhibit about the Titanic with small remote control submarines that you can manipulate and use, which are really fun. There's a touch tank for the kids.
When you say small remote controlled, the robots are in the aquarium you're controlling?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. We're not controlling robots that are at the Titanic or someplace else.
No, that's
it would
true.
Be very that's expensive.
True. That's true. That would be. Bob Ballard is associated with the Mystic Aquarium, and he's had a lot of input as to how the exhibitions are promoted. So it's a neat and very educational display. And then also, of course, you know, for the kids, there's a lot of hands-on touch tank type thing, so kids can actually really interface with the wildlife in a more hands-on way. They have a great penguin exhibition, which is always fun. And then, of course, they do have some shows which help the audiences to understand how beluga whales and seals and those sort of animals actually, how they live and their different aspects. So it's a really a fun aquarium. And certainly what's nice about it is that it's not overwhelmingly large. It's not as big as, say, maybe the one in Boston. So if you don't have enough energy that day or if you think the kids are getting tired, it's just fine to make a day of it and then find something else to do.
And you mentioned buildings in Mystic Seaport, but I remember as a kid, probably what I was even more fascinated by were some of the historic ships that were in the harbor there.
Exactly. The view is outstanding. I did send you a few pictures that I just took the other day because I was walking around the neighborhood and I thought, this is an amazing view. It really is wonderful. And nearby Mystic Seaport is actually the Village of Mystic, which actually has a famous bridge that goes up and down. It's not very far from Mystic Pizza, which, of course, is the movie in which Julia Roberts really got her start. So that makes a wonderful little side trip, too. And I would recommend that, especially for people who are film buffs, because you can walk around Mystic and actually literally see a lot of the scenes that were used from the movie.
Excellent. And you mentioned this as being a great destination for kids, both the Connecticut Shore and Mystic Seaport. And it's fun sometimes, especially with older kids in this case for this particular movie, you know, seeing something like watching a movie before you go someplace that has been in a film can be great fun. I know we did that in the Upper West Side with Who's Got Mail, for instance. And so, you know, it just can be a real good activity before you see something, especially if the film is age appropriate, obviously.
Absolutely.
And I'm not sure that one is, but
that's true. That might not be true. But the Amistad movie was also filmed in that area as well.
So, interesting.
Yes, exactly. So it is a pretty interesting area just from that perspective alone.
Excellent. What is going to surprise me about Connecticut?
Well, there are a few things that are kind of surprising. I've lived here on and off for 15 years, and I've had interactions with people from various parts of the country. And what I find interesting is, for example, because Connecticut is so wooded and forested, people from, say, San Diego might be used to being able to navigate by being able to see where they're going to go before they go. But because you're here in a wooded area, you really don't rely on your ability to see something in order to navigate around it, which I just find interesting that other people have that perspective. Also, if you're from down south in the United States, I think you're going to be surprised at how warm it can get in the summertime. I've had many southern friends who've been surprised. So you do want to take that into consideration. Another problem, of course, is that Connecticut is right between New York City and Boston. So you're going to be affected by some of the travel patterns, including people who are making their way to the Connecticut beaches from the New York City area. Sure. Mm-hmm. So since Route 95 dominates Connecticut shoreline areas, you do really want to make sure that you've timed your trip so that you're not stuck in traffic.
Well, and we say that it's close to New York. For some people who work in New York, Connecticut is home.
Exactly.
So really there are people who do that commute every day, especially obviously when we're talking about Western Connecticut, Southwestern Connecticut especially.
Exactly. In fact, the Gold Coast, as they call it, is actually considered part of the New York City area and part of the tri-state area.
Sure. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. What do the guidebooks recommend? If I picked up a guidebook on Connecticut, what do they recommend that you would say, not so much?
Well, that's an interesting question because I think that there's an awful lot to do and an awful lot to gain from Connecticut. But one thing that I find interesting that is true in almost every guidebook that I've picked up is they talk about how wonderful it is in the wintertime. And I have to be honest, it can snow. New England weather is unpredictable.
Sure.
And while they do have 5 ski resorts at which they even have the ability to make snow in the event that it's not snowing, the fact remains that it's still difficult to navigate in the wintertime. And mm-hmm. I'm not sure that I would recommend people coming to Connecticut in the winter without some serious understanding that their plans might be interrupted by the weather.
Well, and while it does have ski resorts, it isn't a place that I would say you go to Connecticut to ski.
Exactly. I think it's very accessible for the locals,
yeah.
So they take advantage of it. However, you're right. It may not be a place that people come to for skiing alone.
Okay. Any places that you would recommend in terms of interesting accommodations?
Well, you know, what's interesting about Connecticut is that it's a wealthy state and it has an awful lot of amenities for tourists. They have everything here from bed and breakfast to historic inns. But mm-hmm. what I would recommend is that, especially if you're going to be spending a week or two in Connecticut, is to actually rent a house. A lot of the realtors have houses available in their rolls, and they can direct you to some wonderful houses with great views that are very close to the ocean or to the Long Island Sound, really. And you can take advantage of those, especially if you're traveling with a large or extended family. Those actually can be quite ideal. That way you can cook for yourself. You don't have to worry about going out to dinner every night. You can also tap into the local area a little bit better.
Best day of the year to be in Connecticut?
Wow. I'm going to have to say it's the summertime. I really enjoy the 4th of July.
Thought 4th might be up there. Okay.
Exactly. It's a wonderful area. They do have fireworks on the Thames. It's pronounced the Thames River here, not the Thames. The Thames in Groton, Connecticut. They don't actually occur on the 4th of July, but around the 4th of July. But they have some marvelous fireworks that you can observe. You can take advantage of the seafood that's available here in the summertime and around the 4th especially. For example, there's a little restaurant called Abbott's, which is located in Noank, Connecticut, in which you literally get to taste the seafood that is coming right in off of the boats that day. So it's an outstanding resource. And just overall, a day walking along the beaches here is just amazing. It's very relaxing. You feel like you're in another world, but at the same time, it's very accessible. You know, you haven't had to drive or fly for a long period of time. You can actually get to these beaches very quickly.
And you mentioned Groton. Groton obviously is part of Connecticut's continued relationship with the sea because we've got the nuclear submarines based in Groton, although I don't think you can really get on and get a tour usually.
No, but it is funny to see the reactions on their faces when we're sitting on the beaches nearby and you see it at the top of a submarine swim by. It's pretty amazing.
And I think the other thing, I don't know if you've had a chance to be there when some of the big boomer subs go by. It's amazing how big they are.
They really are. They dominate
really
the landscape.
Yeah.
What's also interesting, Chris, is that New London, which is the city right across the river from mm-hmm. the Groton area, is actually becoming the home to cruise ships that are coming in. So these are very large, full-size cruise ships, which are starting to come into that little tiny river area there. The people that typically attend those cruises are coming in from international locations, and they get off of the boat there in New London, and then they take a shuttle up to the casinos, which there are two large casinos on the eastern seaboard of Connecticut. So it's changing the face of those two towns.
So that's some of the cruising that's now getting more and more popular out of New York City heading north.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And actually, and internationally too, these are cruises that are coming in from other countries.
Interesting. Okay. That's a little ways away, unless you're coming in from Canada. So we mentioned seafood. Anything else that is a typical Connecticut dish?
Well, what I find interesting about Connecticut is that it's had a long history of immigration. So among the larger populations that have made their home in Connecticut are Italian Americans. So Connecticut actually has some really good pizza. There's a place called Pepe's Pizza in New Haven, where literally every time I pulled up, I've seen a line wrapping around the building. It's that good and that famous. Of course, there is Mystic Pizza, which everybody knows about. And for movie buffs, it's a nice place to kind of stop off and see. But I would say, actually, the food festivals here are really pretty interesting, too, because they speak to the immigration history of Connecticut. Mm. You'll find a great diversity of food here. There's the Taste of Hartford, which occurs in June, which attracts a lot of people. It's held in the Constitution Plaza area of Hartford. And it's just a wonderful way to sample some of the local foods. All those foods are now local, even though they are of different ethnic backgrounds.
Excellent. Picture, if you will, you're standing in the prettiest spot in all of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I think I'm actually standing at the banks of the Mystic Seaport, and I'm looking across the river,
okay.
And I'm looking at the wonderful old ships that dot the area, and I'm looking at Captain's Row, which is a street full of wonderful old houses that date back to the 1890s. And also in this view, I can see the bridge, which spans the river, and it's just an outstanding, scenic, wonderful view.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Connecticut.
Connecticut. Well, Connecticut, as I mentioned, is probably the wealthiest state in the country, if I'm not mistaken. So it is interesting to see, you know, it's not maybe as flashy as other areas. It's not as flashy as, say, Las Vegas. But there's nonetheless certainly an air of money in many of the areas. So you're going to see overly sized houses, some of those McMansions that you hear about cropping up all over the country. That does happen in Connecticut as well.
Excellent. Sorry, I was just looking. And by the way, it's the third wealthiest state in the U.S.
Really?
I can Google that fast. Yes, after New Hampshire and New Jersey, strangely enough.
Uh-huh. It's also among the most taxed, which is interesting, too. So the services here are pretty good.
Interesting.
The school districts are good.
Before we get to our last two questions, which you know are coming, is there anything else we need to know before we visit Connecticut?
Well, I would make sure that you dress appropriately for the weather. The weather is quite changeable here. So even in the summertime, it might get down into the 50s in the daytime. And then other days, it might be up into the 90s. So you do want to be prepared for that.
Excellent. Finish this sentence, if you would. You really know you're in Connecticut when what?
Wow. When you're standing on the seashore, you're holding a lobster roll in one hand and maybe a beer in the other. You're overlooking this wonderful vista. You're maybe even fighting off the seagulls to keep your lobster roll. And you get to see a submarine go by, the ferries that go out to Block Island in Rhode Island. And you just get to take in this wonderful view.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize Connecticut in three words, what three words would you use?
I would have to say historic,
mm-hmm.
and scenic and dynamic.
Excellent. Jen, thanks so much for coming on The Amateur Traveler and talking about your home state of Connecticut.
Not a problem. It was very, very fun, and I really appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
In news of the community, I had some feedback a while back from Bruce from travelblogger.com, a friend who talked about the Catalina Island podcast. Listen to your Catalina Island podcast. FYI, the vast majority of arrivals to Catalina are by multi-hull high-speed catamaran via catamaranexpress.com. A slow single-hull boat serves San Pedro and Dana Point. I suspect your guest was on the slow boat. I've been to Catalina dozens of times, and since the multi-hulls have started running, I have never seen someone get sick. Actually, I now go by helicopter. It's fast and fun. I got married on the island at the Wrigley Mansion, aka Inn at Mount Ada. Your guests missed the biggest operation on the island, the extensive bus tours that run from 1 hour to a full day offered by Santa Catalina Island Company. She also didn't mention to avoid Tuesdays. That is when the carnival inspiration makes its call. And Bruce, thanks for that important tip. And then I also got a comment from Jeremy on the last episode, which was travel to Savannah, Georgia. Thanks to you and Neil for an excellent episode on one of my favorite places. My wife and I made several trips to Savannah, most recently President's Day weekend last year. Each time we go, we fall in love with the city all over again. Neil really captured what makes Savannah a special place. Whenever I describe it to someone who's never been, I always start by saying it's the ideal of what a southern city should look and feel like. That came across in this episode. I agree with just about everything Neil said about where to go and what to see and do, although I would add a few quick things. No trip to Savannah is complete for me and my wife without a visit to River Street. You find a variety of restaurants, shops, and art stores there, all with views of the Savannah River. I'd especially recommend stopping by River Street Suites if you've got a sweet tooth. While Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil is the movie/book most associated with Savannah, it's not the city's only cinematic connection. The park bench scenes in Forrest Gump, where Tom Hanks gives the famous "Life is like a box of chocolates" line, was filmed in Chippewa Square, and several other parts of the movie were shot around the area. March is a great time to visit weather-wise, but if you decide to go that month, another consideration should be that Savannah has the second largest St. Patrick's Day festival in the United States. Quick historic note, Irish immigrants played a large role in Savannah from its earliest days. The Irish influence is still very much felt in the city's culture today. My first experience in Savannah was during St. Patrick's Day weekend as a college student on spring break more than 10 years ago. The city goes all out for the festival, everything is green, and River Street is filled with people throughout the weekend. It's a fun party, but if big crowds aren't your thing, you probably want to pick a different time to go. As Neil said, you might want to bring walking shoes, but if you want to get a good overview of the city and save your legs a bit, I'd recommend a horse-drawn carriage tour. There are at least a couple different companies that run carriage tours of the historic area starting from the city market. The guides/drivers are very knowledgeable, and there's something about riding in a carriage that fits perfectly with the atmosphere of the city. Finally, as far as southern cuisine goes, you can never go wrong with shrimp and grits. And Jeremy, thanks so much for that comment. You can read that on the episode at episode 329, Travel to Savannah, Georgia. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have a comment, you can do what Jeremy did and leave it on this episode at amateurtraveler.com, or what Bruce did and drop me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. And again, if you're in iTunes and wanted to give us a 5-star review, it helps people find the episode. And as always, thanks so much for listening. One more cathedral, I got to sit in one more cathedral.